We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Blue Wire.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to Brooklyn Buzz. I'm Nick Faye. With me, as always, Jack Manuel. And Jack, the Nets came up with a W tonight, 122-116 over the Denver Nuggets at home. How are you feeling, Jack?
To quote the king himself, Bruce Brown, on Kevin Durant, that man is different.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin Durant put on a show tonight, MVP form. We're going to jump into that and plenty of other stuff. But as always, you can find the Brooklyn Buzz on all streaming platforms, including OTGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com, and Blue Wire Pods. But, Jack, where do we start?
Kevin Durant, Nick. Kevin Durant. He is proving himself to be, every move that he does, like in that first quarter, that crossover on Paul Millsap was just filthy. Like, is he? And
Paul Millsap looked like he was in quicksand.
Like, and this is a man who's doing these moves coming off a torn Achilles. You know, we saw the OTG account. I have some fun with that. And I can't. He boggles belief the way that he plays basketball. He's that skilled. He's that talented. He's that dude. He's different.
Yeah, he's different. And like you said, Jack, I thought tonight we saw a lot of explosive plays, a lot of drives to the rim going off of both feet. And obviously, that's just a positive sign. He's just looking more and more comfortable. Obviously, there was a couple turnovers, but 34 points, 13 assists, 12 of 18 from the field, 4 of 7 from 3, 6 of 7 from the free throw line, and 9 rebounds. One rebound shy of that triple-double. But man, he put the team on his back, and he really set the tone in that third quarter, which translated into a comeback.
He is unstoppable when he wants to be. And when he is the heliocentric part of the Brooklyn Nets, he can go, all right, Kyrie's not playing. I can be the best player in the world and prove that and then some. No defender in the league is going to be able to stop Kevin Durant the way that he played tonight. Yeah, there were some turnovers here and there, but he is playing complete basketball. You know, we've already seen him get a triple-double for the Brooklyn Nets. He just seems to me that he is leading this team and getting them on his back, and people are following him. Bruce Brown's following him. Karras is following him. Jared Allen, Joe Harris are following him. Kevin Durant is setting the tone, not only in his play, but in his leadership, his communication. He is the nucleus of this team right now, and we'll get to Kyrie stuff later on. But Kevin Durant, as a leader, he is setting the tone not only with his actions, but definitely with his words. And he's having a little bit of a chat to our boy Nicholas Claxton as well.
Yeah, and that's great to see. And obviously, around that 30-second mark, he hit the dagger three, and that closed out the game, like you said. And you saw him going to the bench. He had a little spry in him, hopping over there. It was good to see. And just like the energy from Kevin Durant with his teammates is just awesome. And also the energy that I saw a lot of the teammates give to Bruce Brown tonight after he hit a couple shots in the fourth quarter, that was awesome too. Like, you're seeing the team build up some of that chemistry and cohesion, which is really tough to do given the pandemic and all the protocols out there. It limits a lot of their interaction.
It does, and obviously we saw greater limitations on that today, with good reason. I think some of them are all fool's gold to an extent, and you know that could be something to discuss on the outlet and JVT. But I think that this team is developing an identity, and while the defensive identity isn't necessarily there yet, thank God for Bruce Brown because he's helping set that, as is Jared Allen. But I think that you know there are things happening along the way. And look, the Denver Nuggets are an incredible offensive team.
Yep.
The two teams we've given up, you know, absolutely inflated scores to, the Atlanta Hawks and the Denver Nuggets, are two of the better offensive teams in the league. It's about sort of being able to produce it for 48 minutes. And now it's a lot easier said than done to go, all right, Kevin Durant, shoot like 100% from the field in the second half. I don't know what he shot, but it seemed like he didn't miss. It seemed like the Nets didn't miss. TLC was hitting shots. Bruce Brown was hitting shots. Shaman was hitting shots. Torian Prince was playing. You know, it's a Tuesday.
Put
so he's going to be testing up.
Man, that was nuts.
That was absolutely crazy. I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, and I haven't stopped drinking it. He is absolutely performing like a madman. Absolutely loving what he does on Tuesdays and other days of the week as well. But Nick, I don't know how words can't express how amazing Kevin Durant is at playing basketball and that he is wearing the uniform for the team that we happen to follow. I mean, I'd be marveled at if he was doing this for Golden State or OKC. But the fact that he's doing it for the team that we follow, the team that we cover, it takes it to a whole new level, and I can't... Sometimes it's hard to fathom. Like, we forget some of these moves that he did, like against Hachimura the other night, where he killed him, and was DJ that stopped that from being a highlight. You know, he's shooting fadeaway after fadeaway after fadeaway in the post. He's hitting pull-up threes now. I don't know. This is the Kevin Durant that I think other teams are going to fear, and this is the Kevin Durant that I believed at the start of the season that could lead us to a championship. There is a long way to go. But I stand by my sentiments made in the preseason about the fact that if Kevin Durant comes back to, you know, 95% of Kevin Durant, we heard at the start of the season that he was in the 90s. He's got to be getting close to the late 90s right now.
98, 99.
Oh, man. He's on 100 in some form or another. But if he comes back and he is what he's doing right now, the Brooklyn Nets are going to be in there with a championship. Because how do you stop him? How do you stop him, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, he gives you the ability to win any game, and in any series, you feel confident having the best player when he's playing at this level. And like you said, Jack, 12 of 18 from the field with an array of different shots, and some of them being extremely difficult. Half of them were jump shots. Who shoots 66% with half of them being jump shots? It's just the efficiency is nuts, and he's just such a dynamic scorer. And even his understanding of how defenses are playing him too, you can see at times, especially on that last possession or at times when he was calling those ISOs where he's like, no, I don't want the help. I want to be able to handle this guy one-on-one because, like you said, Jack, he can beat anybody.
Talk us through that final shot, Nick, where he almost got the double, but then was able to create the space for himself for that three.
Yeah, I mean, he saw Jared Allen was trying to come up. He said, nope, don't let Nikola Jokic get into the space, and that forced Jokic away, and he wasn't able to get into a spot to affect his shot, and then KD just hit Will Barton with a nice step back, and the rest is history.
It's a thing of beauty. It's so damn pure. He's now 28th on the all-time scoring list. You know, he could go down as one of the top five scorers ever if he continues to produce at this level. You know, he's playing MVP-level basketball, and for me, he's the MVP right now. Obviously, you can go to Joel Embiid, you can go to Nikola Jokic, but these sort of guys. But the impact that Kevin Durant is having on this team, and if he stays around playing 60 or so games, Kevin Durant is going to be the most valuable player in the league. Or he's going to be LeBron James and be the best player that doesn't win the MVP.
Yeah, if the Nets don't win enough games or some narrative-based thing doesn't allow him. But he does have that on his side with coming back from the torn Achilles and looking like he destroyed science. Like, you know what I mean? It doesn't make any sense of all the studies we read about where he's at this point in time. And I feel like him playing at such a high level and knocking down all these shots is kind of contagious for some of the Nets. Like you talked about, Jack, he really didn't miss a shot in the third quarter. It felt like the entire Nets team didn't miss a shot because the ball just had so much rhythm.
Yeah, it defies belief. It defies modern science what he is doing right now. And you know, it's good to see, you know, the likes of John Wall doing the same sort of thing in Houston. Not
and
the
our
same
boy David Nwaba.
David Nwaba as well doing some great things in Houston as well. So it's awesome to see. We want the NBA players to recover from these injuries, and thank God for the medical teams around the league. They're doing a fantastic job. 13 assists, Nick. That's something to me that really sticks out. I'd have to dive deep onto, you know, Kevin Durant's career high in assists in a game, but that'd have to be up there, surely.
Yeah, I mean, that one pass he had to the corner, I think it was to Caris LeVert from the opposite side of the floor. That's a LeBron James type of pass or a Luka type of pass, and we saw KD do that tonight. And you, we mentioned the seven turnovers. I think some of them is just him getting more comfortable with his teammates, knowing where they're going to be in certain spots and not trying to force things. Like one play, for example, he threw the ball off Jeff Green's back because I think he expected Jeff Green to kind of turn the opposite way.
Yeah, he's trying to find Jared Allen a lot on the roll, yep. whether he's when he's slipping the screen, and I like that. But at the same time, there's a time and a place to play a little bit more conservative basketball.
And the passes you know, are a touch short because Jared Allen is so much taller. You know what I mean? Like he can jump over guys, and he's not giving him that opportunity.
Yeah, no, it's totally. And look, you take it with a grain of salt. Yeah, I think that turnovers are a thing that I think are much more correctable than the defense that is still certainly a question going forward for the Brooklyn Nets. You know, turnovers is something I think when it comes to like playoff series and ladder points where important games are really happening, you play a more conservative style of offense. It's much more half court. You're not pushing the pace as much. And I think that the Brooklyn Nets have an incredible opportunity to play really good half-court offense. There's no doubt about that when you have Kevin Durant, Caris LeVert, and hopefully Kyrie Irving out there on the court. So, I mean, we could talk about Kevin Durant for 45 minutes on this podcast, Nick. I still can't comprehend that this is his best game as a Brooklyn Net in his short tenure in, six to seven games or so.
He beat a good team.
And look, it was against a really good team, coming off a back-to-back as well, but the Denver Nuggets are a great team. They're incredibly well-coached. They've got, you know, two superstars in Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic. I thought that it was a great performance. And for Kevin Durant to lead them in the absence of Kyrie Irving, I think that he can mesh the identity of the team around him. We've heard in post-game press conferences the way he's communicating about the team, about opposing teams. It just seems to me Kevin Durant has a will and desire to set a new narrative for himself and for the Brooklyn Nets going forward. You know, without Kyrie Irving, I'm still pretty damn comfortable with Kevin Durant leading the team. It'd be much better if Kyrie Irving was out there. But Kevin Durant at this point in time, if he plays like he did tonight, you know, 18 shots isn't enough either.
Yeah.
Like, give that man 25.
Yeah, no, I thought he did a good job, though, with the balance and getting the 13 assists and kind of playing off those double teams. But like you said, and like we analyzed so many quotes over the summer or during pressers or whatever it might be, Kevin Durant kind of took ownership of this team. You know what I mean? Like, he referred to this team of his own, and I think that's like the next chapter for him is leading a team on his own and carrying them to a championship, because we know the narrative with Golden State was it was always Steph's team, and KD was kind of along for the ride, which we know isn't true, but that's the narrative for the media. But, Jack, I think we should talk about the defense. First half, they let up 70 points. Second half, they let up 46 points.
And look, Caris LeVert echoed that in his comments to the media after the game. I think this is via Matt Brooks. I think our defense got better, and then Kevin Durant just took over, to be honest with you, on the win. Look, obviously, Kevin Durant can do Kevin Durant things. There are a few players in the league. Name me another player that can do what Kevin Durant did tonight, Nick. You know, name me a couple, because I think Stephen Curry can do it. Yep. James Harden, when he's not fat.
LeBron can do it too. It might be a different way, obviously, but
there's not many others that can. That can just go off the, you know what, give me the ball, I'm going to lead this team. Kyrie can do it to an extent, but yep. I think Kyrie can. The thing that I'm loving about Kevin Durant is, you know, his tenure in Golden State allowed him to play, you know, this beautiful basketball. He talked about before moving to Golden State that, you know, he wanted to play a more complete version of basketball. He is a hooper. He wants to be the fullest version of himself. So he's going to be getting triple doubles on many a night. There might come nights where he has to score 50 and have like two assists or so. But I think his awareness, there isn't a smarter basketballer in the game. I mean, it's him and LeBron James that are just the two most intelligent basketballers of the modern era.
Yeah, it's funny, is like you see KD, and when he plays defense, I notice his basketball IQ even more, because he has the scouting report of almost every single player. Like, you know, in your head where you're like, yo, this guy wants to go right, or he has a bad three-point shot and the guy fouls him on a three-point shot or lets him go right. Like, KD never really allows that to happen. He's always in a good position and understands his opponent's strength. And I also like some of his defensive plays on Nikola Jokic.
Yeah, I think that this isn't a slight to Jared Allen at all, but Kevin Durant's probably the best post defender on the team.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, depending on the size, I think DeAndre does a solid job against some of the really, really big guys. But KD, I think he just has more of a toughness where Jared Allen allows the impact to come to him, where KD's giving a little bit back. Like you saw that one play where he kind of hit Jokic with that forearm and Jokic went to the ground. They didn't get the call because Jokic is trying to create the contact. So KD just kind of held his own. And Jared Allen too many times was just getting shoved backwards.
Yeah, and look, Jared Allen was still very good tonight. He wasn't his usual outstanding stuff that we have seen in previous games, but he impacts winning on many occasions.
And it might be that he might have faced the best center in the NBA. If he's not one, he's two. You know what I mean?
And you know what? Mitchell Robinson might say that he's easy to guard, but I certainly disagree. Nikola Jokic is probably the best center in the league right now, and him and Joel Embiid are dueling for that position. Yep. There's no doubt about it. And Jared Allen has held his own against both of them in the past week or so. So certainly kudos to him. But Nick, Bruce Brown, baby. We finally got it. We got the Bruce Brown that we wanted and hoped for. There was a time period in that third quarter, no, second quarter, where it was like, Bruce, where's Bruce? Where's Bruce? It's like, where's Wally? I couldn't find him. I had to keep turning the pages to try and find him. He was out for more than 12 minutes after playing some really good hustle defense, you know, really making things tough for the likes of Jamal Murray out on the perimeter. And then we got the full Bruce Brown experience. And by Lord, was it awesome.
Yeah, I mean, 8 of 11 from the field, 16 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, and like you mentioned, Jack, also I got to throw in those 3 blocks, which is a pretty nice number for a guard. The defense on Jamal Murray was great. He made Jamal Murray earn every single basket. Every bucket that Jamal Murray scored on him was a fadeaway jumper that was tough. You know what I mean? So his defensive impact was felt, and he's one guy in the Nets that fights through screens. Like, if you're going to set a screen on him, you're going to earn it.
Yeah, if his shoulders are that big, man, I wouldn't want to set a screen on Bruce Brown. That dude would send me to the floor. But yeah, Nikola Jokic is doing it to you. You know, it's certainly something different. But that dude is just jacked. And we've said that about him on other podcasts as well. But his strength and his impact, I think, is immense. And, you know, the decision by Steve Nash to insert him back into the starting lineup, Caris LeVert was fine with it. He sort of said, all I care about is winning, you know, in the postgame to the likes of Chris Mulholland and others. So I think that for balance going forward, this might be the starting lineup. You can replace Joe Harris with maybe like a Torian Prince or someone else, or maybe if you want to put in Landry Shamet. I don't necessarily care because
I think having Joe in there is good though because it gives KD an outlet.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. It's just that we want, and we've alluded to this on previous podcasts, we want him with Caris as well.
Yeah.
So it's like Joe Harris is so damn important to the impact and success of other players. And he had a great game tonight as well. We can get to him in a little bit, even if he is throwing headbands on the floor and getting damn pissed off Jermichael Green. And they'll say Hartenstein, I think that's how I say it according to Iron Eagle. I mean, that ain't a real poster, my dude. Joe Harris is at least jumping. It was actually a pretty good poster. But thank you, Joe.
It was like he just like almost like jumped over Joe Harris. It was kind of crazy because Joe didn't like fully contest. He just kind of put his hands up like he thought he was going to go soft. But I'll give that kid Isaiah Hartenstein some credit. He played pretty
pesky. Hartenstein, I think it is. I think Iron Eagle made it.
I don't even know. Sarah and Ian honestly confused shit. And yeah, I thought I knew how to say it. Now I don't know.
Hartenstein. It's like, you know, when you get a Steiger of beer or whatever. I have no idea, man. We're not going
to... Bruce Brown still, though. I want to give him a lot of credit for those push shots / floaters that he was hitting at the end of the game. Like, those were huge clutch shots in the fourth quarter, and Denver kind of wasn't guarding him in certain circumstances, or they were just allowing him to get to the rim, and he finished really well. He uses his body, and he kind of seems out of control a little bit, but he ends up finishing the bucket, so it works out.
Yeah, no, there was many occasions where Bruce Brown gets in close enough where it's just like, yep, this is a good shot. You can take that little floater that is your bread and butter. And he's immense downhill. You know, he's great downhill finishing layups. You know, he's not going to be as creative a shot maker as Caris LeVert or Kevin Durant. But you get the ball in the hand in good positions, he's going to show quickness. He's going to show strength. And there's times where, like, he's finishing over dudes and through dudes because he's just that jacked. And, like, you know, he's... no taller than me or you, Nick, but he's got the shoulders of Dwight Howard.
Yeah, he really does. He has some nice strength. He can take that contact and go inside there. And I like that he doesn't force a three-point shot. He knows he's not a great three-point shooter. He did take two tonight to keep the defense honest. But a lot of the times, he would just drive out of that corner and end up getting either a layup or set somebody else set up for a pass or a shot.
And no, I agree, Nick. I think taking a couple is fine. You know, I think, like you said, keep the defense honest. You know, he doesn't have to be a great deep pusher. He can be 30%, 29% on the year. If they respect you well enough that you think you're going to take it, then that's, you just have to take those shots anyway. It's like Kelly Oubre or whatever. It's going to happen eventually because you need to garner the respect of the defense. And, you know, I can't say enough about his defense on Jamal Murray. I know we alluded to it earlier, Nick. But every single time, he was up in his grill. It was, you know, Patrick Beverley, Tony Allen style. It's high praise for Bruce Brown, a guy who I think that was developing so well in Detroit and became such a great secondary facilitator, great ball handler and scorer. We saw that against our own team last year. But now the change of role is sort of being that sort of basically semi-point guard in the starting lineup and just getting the ball to KD as a sort of a facilitator and running downhill and just making and honing defensive plays. And
some good cuts too.
Really good cuts. He just makes the team better. His presence gives it balance. And what the Nets need is defensive balance. You have Jeff Green and Bruce Brown out there at the same time and Jared Allen and Kevin Durant. I'm going to be pretty happy. And it also makes things easy for Joe Harris. Yeah. Although Joe Harris's effort there tonight was also incredible. He's obviously going to get caught out a couple of times due to his lack of athleticism. All those four guys we just alluded to are greater athletes. But I don't know if other than Bruce Brown, any of them show as much effort as Joe does.
Yeah, maybe I think Jared Allen probably does, but I'll give Joe Harris a lot of credit on the one play. I don't know if he double-teamed Nikola Jokic in the post, and then he sprinted to the other end of the floor to defend Paul Millsap. And that's the type of plays and rotations you need to make if you want to be a championship team, and credit to Joe Harris for the hustle.
He made those sort of plays. I think he's a guy that's starting to really understand the scheme, and I think the scheme suits him. And I think he's taking a little bit of leadership within that defensive scheme and the switching and stuff. And I thought the awareness to be able to create the double on, and it happened against Joel Embiid. And there were times in seasons past, whether it was against Jokic, whether it was against Embiid, whether it was against Davis, where it's just like, all right, Jared Allen, all right, DeAndre, you guys are out on an island here. And when it's the best players in the league, you know, you see teams time and time after again blitz Stephen Curry, blitz James Harden.
They blitz their own players.
Yeah, exactly. And Nikola Jokic is that great that if you create pressure for him, it makes it harder. He's still the best passer in the league, if not top two there. It's still going to make it his life hard and difficult. And I thought Joe Harris, as well as others, did a really good job of that.
Yeah, I think you just want to force somebody else to beat you. You know, you want to force Paul Millsap to make a play or make a decision or something like that. So...
Hey everyone, before we get into today's pod, I want to tell you about Blue Wire Hustle, a brand new program where you can host your very own podcast here at Blue Wire. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle's the perfect place for you.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, and e-learning courses full of tips and tricks. And on top of that, we'll help you get your show out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all other listening platforms. And the best part? It's only $15, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you just for the initial setup. So whether you're starting from scratch or have an existing show that you want to grow, Hustle's an open door to leveling up your sports experience. Acceptance in the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box for this episode to find out more. But that's bwhustle.com/join.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G, because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters, the more your network matters, the more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of three mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.
You know, credit to Joe Harris, like you said, Jack, another really efficient game from him. 6-9 from the field, 3-5 from three-point land, 15 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists. And I like that little in-between shot. It's not a pull-up mid-ranger like at the elbow. It's almost closer to the rim. I've noticed he's been doing that a little bit more lately because teams realize he's trying to get those easy lay-ins.
His field goal percentage on the year, we alluded to it on the last podcast, but I don't know. His percentages are only going to go up because, yeah, you know, if you give Joe Harris 9 shots, he's going to hit 5 or 6 of them, no doubt. If you give him a couple of threes, he's hitting at least 50% of them, 60% again tonight. And I don't know. There aren't enough. He's earned the contract, and he hasn't settled within that. You know, a lot of players that get the bag, you look at like Andrew Wiggins after his first year of getting the bag, and it's just like, all right, I'm not going to try and defense anymore. But Joe Harris is continuing to grow as a player. You know, he knows his limitations, but within his limitations, they aren't that weak. It's not like, you know, you can get Joe Harris out on an island and really attack him like you probably could. Maybe Landry Shamet is probably the only guy, and Chris Chioza are the two guys on the roster where I'm kind of, you know, iffy about when they get caught on a switch. If it's Joe Harris, he's going to show strength. He's going to at least move and make it hard for you to get through him. And then Jared Allen's behind to sort of back you up. But yeah, you did mention that sort of mid-range shot, Nick. He seems to want that shot now. He seems to, no matter where the shots are coming from, he's not settling. He's looking comfortable, fluid, and in rhythm, whatever shot that he takes. He's not really forcing anything. It's just like, okay, here's a little bit of space here. I'll take this and I'll hit it. And he never takes a bad shot because he turns it into a good shot. It's what the best players do. They make bad shots good or turn bad shots into better shots.
Yeah, I mean, he just does a great job of understanding leverages of the defense. You know what I mean? Where he can find that space. And I think he does a really nice job of playing off Kevin Durant. And obviously, he's really good at coming off screens. Like, that's how he gets his space, because he runs so hard and tough through those screens. It's hard to keep up. And then he gets that one step, like you said, and he's getting so confident and comfortable. All he needs is that one step. We saw him pull up on Jamal Murray a couple times in turns coming off the screen, where I don't think he takes those contested looks last year.
No, I agree. And I think that we sort of alluded to Kevin Durant and Bruce Brown. You feel the energy in basketball. Yep. You know, basketball is a chemistry and cohesion sort of sport. It's jazz. You sort of feel the vibes and you vibe with each other. You take this shot, you take that shot. You hit the cymbal here, you play the piano there. And Joe Harris and Bruce Brown were jazzing out like it was no one else's business tonight. And they were feeding off the leader, the guy on the trombone, the guy on the vocals, the guy on the piano. Kevin Durant was playing like 9 instruments at once tonight. And everyone else was just following his lead. And I think that if you have that game after game, it lifts the level of others because Kevin Durant draws so much attention and so much gravity. It allows the likes of Bruce Brown, who isn't a great offensive player, to be able to hit those push shots that he loves. It allows Caris LeVert to be able to attack lanes when he's out there with KD. It allows Joe Harris to get open spots on the three, which he probably hasn't had many of this season. But with Kevin Durant out there, he's passing incredibly well and looking for those spots and looking for his teammates. So, I mean, it all comes back to KD. It all comes back to your best player at the end of the day, Nick. And, I mean, he's playing like
three steals for Joe, too, tonight.
I thought that the defensive activity from our starters was good in the second half.
The second half, the defense was completely different from the first half.
What would you say the big differentiator was, Nick?
Honestly, it's so simple. A lot of it was just basic communication. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of the switches in the first half, guys were getting wide open. There's a play in that, I think, second quarter where Monte Morris just walks into a three, and I think it's like miscommunication between Jeff Green and Caris LeVert, or it was Caris LeVert and Torian Prince, and then there were some plays where, even with the starters, it was Kevin Durant and Jared Allen. And in the second half, it felt like they really cleaned that up. They got some more hustle plays, and they just were playing in guys' face. You know what I mean? Like, especially Bruce Brown, like we talked about, getting into Jamal Murray and making him uncomfortable, and then throwing an occasional different look at Nikola Jokic was also big too.
No, and I think that with that as well, there was the, it wasn't not just the Morris pull-up three. It was then followed up by a Campazzo pull-up three. And it's just shot happened at the exact same spot. At the same spot, just a different player. And Campazzo isn't Joe Harris. But you can't give any NBA player that semblance of space. Even Dwight Howard's going to hit that three-point shot, or DeAndre Jordan. So I think that there was an element of laziness and a lack of mental activity on that end of the floor, and they just switched up to another level. I'd love to have some like synergy stats and cleaning the glass stats to see what the defensive rating was in that second half, because it certainly went to another level, and it was led by, you know, the leaders out there and the starters. They were like, okay. And then Taurean Prince came in and really set the tone. Yep. Caris LeVert, I thought, was better there at times, even though he had a greater offensive burden. And I thought his game tonight, Nick, as well, fifth straight game with 20 points or more. That's a tie. That's a career high for him. And man, that Euro was goddamn filthy.
Yeah, I mean, he really got Nikola Jokic with that Euro. I thought it was a really nice game from LeVert. There was a couple bad possessions sprinkled in, but 20 points on 50% from the field, 40% from three, you know, six assists, five rebounds, only one turnover. You're going to be happy with that performance. And I think his passing is really improving. Like, that's, I recall when we first used to watch Caris LeVert, and really the only passes he was making were to bigs. You know what I mean? It was a lot of inside passing to Jared Allen on the oop, or just that bounce pass or that wraparound pass. But he's gotten a lot better at hitting guys on the perimeter. There's one play that sticks out with Kevin Durant where he's about to pull up for the mid-ranger, corner of his eye sees KD, kicks it out, KD knocks down the open three.
Yeah, I think that he's still, obviously, it's hard for him to be the lead facilitator for whatever unit.
I think
that
it's
still
a developing skill for him.
Absolutely. You know, and look, he's not a point guard. He's not Spencer Dinwiddie. He's not Chris Paul. But he's being asked to, because in the absence of Kyrie Irving and in the absence of Spencer Dinwiddie, he has to fill that role. Yep. And he's finding a greater balance going forward. And, you know, in 26 minutes to get 20 points and show efficiency of 8 of 15, 2 of 5 from 3, also hit a couple of free throws as well. And off offensive boards, you know, off his own misses. Yep. You know, he's showing strength and purpose and aggression. And I think that that's where the line is. You know, like, probably more than any other sport, you know, basketball is a mental sport, and you can just tell where Caris is showing the right amount of aggression, and he's not out of control. He's finding his own shot. You know, he's able to hit that mid-range shot that he loves after, you know, showing, you know, true aggression to get to the rim and really force the defense, make it hard on them, make them foul you, make them make the decision rather than putting it on you and making and bailing them out with the, you know, an 18-footer or whatever. So I think that this sort of five-game stretch that we've seen from him is what I've wanted from him, you know, when I was questioning whether he can acclimate to this new role. I'm pretty comfortable with it now. It's going to be a game-by-game process like it is for the rest of the team. He probably has the toughest time to adjust because he has to do so much, whereas he's obviously he has done that before, but with new players and a different unit and against these sort of guys, and then being thrust into as well being with the starters, because when you want your five best players out there, Caris is going to be playing. So there's a lot of adjustment for Caris, probably in a similar way that we spoke about with Spencer Dinwiddie at the start of the season. Caris is having to take on that burden now, and he's relishing it, and hopefully he continues to do so.
Yeah, I think he's starting to get comfortable, especially with some of those second unit guys and finding his rhythm. I was also somewhat impressed because we know, you know, the pick and roll is such a big part of Caris LeVert's game. And you can't really necessarily run that a ton with Jeff Green because he's not the same type of roll option you're going to get into Jared Allen or DeAndre Jordan. So kind of finding other ways to adapt and just taking guys on ISOs I thought was somewhat impressive. And I think defensively, you know, he's going to be hit or miss. There was a couple plays where he probably went for the steal and he shouldn't have. But I do like his physicality when he gets switched onto a big. He does not make it easy for them. You know what I mean? Like, he's willing to fight through them and trying to make them earn that position. Sometimes he gets a foul, but I appreciate the aggression.
That's all you want, Nick. The key is aggression there. And who did you want to touch on next?
Let's talk about TLC. It's mad funny is because I DM'd you and it was during TLC's worst stretch. I think that was the end of the first quarter, right? Where he shot too early at the end of the corner, ended up getting Denver another possession. In the previous play, he'd fouled Nikola Jokic off ball and gave up two free throws. But after that, he really turned things around, played with some great hustle, hit some big threes in that second half.
Shows maturity. You know, yep. I always call him, you know, the bipolar NBA player. And, you know, when you're a role player, you are going to have those bipolar moments. But, you know, he showed real maturity to impact the game at key moments. And, you know, I thought that his defense was good. I thought that his three-point shot was back on. And, you know, and if you're looking at the bench players, you know, the only player that had finished with the positive in the plus-minus was TLC. Yeah. 11 points for him, 3-6 from the field, and all those shots came from three. Did get to line a couple of times as well. He's becoming more pesky, more physical, and I'm just enjoying what he's bringing to this team. Whether it's as a... And I think that he can bring more against second units.
Yeah. I think he can drive to the rim a little bit. I think his passing's improved too, making some quick decisions out there. And like you said, Jack, you know, just some of that maturity from him. And he's kind of becoming that annoying player on the Nets that really just like drives the other team nuts. And you need those. You know, they're just the type of players you need. I thought his communication was really good in the second half too on a lot of those switches, making sure to shout things out or just being on the same page as his teammates.
Yeah, and I think that that's what he's doing better. Like, there was a burden for him playing with the starters early in the season in terms of like, you got to hit these open shots. It's Kyrie and KD. Those are the shots that you have to hit. Whereas now it's just, there's a greater, an easier flow when he's with that second unit because all these guys are going to get given shots. TP, you know.
And they're going to touch the ball more, Jack, too. And I think that sometimes is undervalued. Where like, if you get a couple dribbles in there, it just makes him feel a little bit more comfortable.
Yeah, definitely. You just need to feel that ball on your hands. You know, there's different systems, and I think that the way the Brooklyn Nets are playing offense when the ball is being moved a lot, and you know, we saw, you know, 31 assists tonight as well. You know, it was 31-28 that the ball was fizzing on both ends of the floor when both teams were feeling it. So yeah, TLC, I think this is the sort of role that I want from him going forward, and we can't expect from him night after night after night. But you know, I thought that he was. I don't know, who was better, TLC or Torian Prince? I think it leads in nicely to the discussion about him.
Yeah, I mean, I think I love Torian Prince's aggressive drives and just some of that like extra energy he'll occasionally bring, and he just gets very hyped. But I think TLC kind of feels a little bit steadier, and obviously had some bigger minutes in the fourth quarter with the starters that kind of helped close the game. He was subbed out, I think, at the four-minute mark for like Caris LeVert. But I know equally just both really nice games from them. You know, Torian Prince has been really impressive over the last week or two. Obviously, there's still some blunders in there, but you're seeing a lot more positive play. And last year, it was either going to be a bad game and you're getting all bad plays, then you occasionally get the good game, where now Torian Prince will have some of these mistakes and then he'll clean it up later in the game or he'll make up for it with some big plays on the other end.
Yeah, I think the positivity is in the purpose and in the mentality. You know, I think we've spoken about this, you know, a lot of times on this podcast. It's been a key sort of discussion point. Torian Prince is wanting to drive to the line. He's wanting to play, to make these hustle plays. He's not just settling and trying to create his own shot in isolation. He's hitting the three, you know, when the important shot comes. I'm surprised that he's only 1 of 4 from there, because to me, you know, that one, I think, in the third quarter was, you know, a really, really important one to keep the run and keep that lead going with the second unit out there and Kevin Durant and Bruce Brown and all the starters. I thought that, you know, his importance is becoming quite pronounced with this team, and I think that I like the balance that Steve Nash has started to find with his role and the rest of the team's role. It seems to me that there is a sort of like, okay, this is what we can sort of do to get the best out of these players, and I think to find that after 12 games is quite good. But you know, I think that Torian Prince is going to have a mistake per game, because he's not a flawless player. No one on this team is. He can't show the level of efficiency of Joe Harris. He doesn't have the talent of Kevin Durant, but he's going to be like a TLC. He's going to have the mistakes every now and then. But does his good make up for his bad? I thought both of them, their good did make up for their bad. And when they did make mistakes, they didn't make two mistakes, three mistakes in a row.
It was
the same mistakes. I think that they're showing a level of maturity that is really showing that they're blossoming and flourishing as a player, as a Brooklyn Net.
Yeah, and that putback slam, I mean, probably one of his best highlights as a Net. I can't remember many times of him actually dunking. Like, a lot of the time when he dunks, it's usually, like, soft dunks. You know what I mean? Where he's, like, almost dropping it in. That one, he was hanging on the rim. It was like, I thought it might bend for a second.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that's a really good point. And, you know, he's driving a lot. And the one thing that I do like as well is that he's making the right decisions off the drive. He's not forcing shots, because there's times where he's kicking out these passes and I'm like, okay, TP. And he's just showing great awareness and intelligence off his drives, which I think that a lot of players don't necessarily have that ability to just go, all right, I'm going to drive the ball now and not show a level of erratic nature and composure. But he's been able to do that on more times than not.
Yeah. And I think his decision-making, too, when he gets the ball on the perimeter. Last year, we saw a lot of either I'm going to shoot the three or I'm just going to hesitate and then end up doing nothing. Where this year, it's a lot of, hey, I'm either going to shoot the three or I'm going to drive the ball right off the bounce because that gives me an advantage and I can get to the rim. And I think also some of the scouting report of him not necessarily being a driver has allowed him to get these open lanes, and it just makes the offense a little bit more dynamic. And like you said, Jack, there's going to be bad, but there's also going to hopefully be more good.
Absolutely. Nick, I wanted to, you know, we'll probably intersperse quotes like we normally do with this podcast, but I just saw this one, and I think Karis Avert makes a good point. We've been searching for a win like this. I think games like this are huge for confidence. Just knowing you can win these games is always good for your mindset. Is this a turning point for the Brooklyn Nets, or is this just going to be one game that we have to sort of go? Because even with the losses, you sort of have to maintain that level of balance. I mean, it's hard as fans, but for the players, I mean, hopefully this is a key driver, knowing that, you know, this is where we can lock in defensively against a really good offensive team. And, you know, if we get the ball to Kevin Durant's hands and, you know, he just does magical things when it's impacting himself or others.
Yeah, I think when you have stretches like they did in that second half where you go on these giant runs and you don't miss shots, it kind of helps build some confidence. And defensively, being able to come back against a team that was up 18 on you, that's a good team that was just in the Western Conference Finals, I think you do have to get some confidence. Obviously, this season has been so sporadic for what feels like every single team in the league. So ask me after next game, but I think it does have the potential to help push them forward or at the very least show a little bit more of the flash that they do have.
Yeah, no, definitely. You know, it's good to hear it, but, we have to see it in action for the next game and sort of going forward. Anyone else you wanted to touch on, Nick? I think Jeff Green, man. That
just
dude
solid
is
solid Jeff, Uncle Jeff.
Uncle Jeff is just so damn dependable. You know, we sort of talk about, like, TLC and Torian Prince or, like, you know, their mistakes or whatever. Jeff Green rarely makes mistakes, and he just does. He makes the right plays time and time again.
Yeah, a couple turnovers tonight, but, you know, some of that was on him, some of that was on his teammates. But like you said, Jack, he does a lot of good things out there, and he played small ball center tonight. You know, we didn't see DeAndre Jordan. We saw Jeff Green out there a lot of the time, and I thought that allowed them to have some really nice versatility against that second unit, especially in the second half. So credit to Jeff Green for just continuing to be a steady force for this team.
What did you think of the decision of the DNP for DeAndre, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to dispute it. I'm not even trying to be mean to DeAndre Jordan. I think, you know, it's fine. And maybe it's a rest for next game, and he's going to play more minutes against the Knicks, which are a somewhat physical team. And, you know, Steve Nash maybe didn't like the matchup against Nikola Jokic, which I agree with. The way DeAndre's been playing, I think Jokic would have cooked him. And against Hardenstein or however you say his name, I think he was just a little bit pesky, a little bit too active. And given how DeAndre's played, I think he might have got a couple fouls on DeAndre.
No, I thought it was good coaching from him. And yep. And I think that that shows a level of awareness that we probably haven't seen from Steve Nash. Well, we have seen from him sometimes, but I think a lot of the time it's just like, come on, Steve, we know what to do here. And a level of proactivity, I think, that yep. we've wanted from him. Make the decision to impact winning. Make the decision, and if you're wrong, you know, eat it and learn from it. But tonight, you know, it was a good decision, and I think you hit on all the good points there. You know, whether it's against Mitchell Robinson, Julius Randle, or, you know, all these other sort of big dudes that the New York Knicks have, I think he can have an impact. And, you know, again, going against his former team, there's always going to be a little bit of extra juice there. And Jared Allen did play 36 minutes tonight. You know, it's not that he can't play. I expect Jared Allen to average 33 or 34 minutes on the season. I think it's going to be a career high for him because he's 22 years old and he's going to be able to continue to play that. He's going to want to play that. But I think that there are going to be moments where we see 27 and maybe 15 from DeAndre and some minutes and filling in at the center spot for Jeff Green too. So good decision. I was all yep. for it.
I think let's also give Landry Shamet a shout-out. I thought he played a little bit better tonight, got a little bit more confidence. I like that he drove to the rim on two possessions. I think he hit one of them, missed the other one. But, hey, your three-point shot isn't necessarily falling. You're going to find other ways to do something. And I think it's a positive sign, hopefully, for him trying to find that rhythm. Because if he can get hot and get comfortable, it just provides the Nets with another dynamic three-point threat.
Absolutely. I love his mentality as well. You know, yep. we've heard and seen the quotes and stuff. You know, he's been on Twitter and such. And I think that, you know, he's spoken and the level of honesty we've seen from him and Torian Prince and these sort of dudes. You know, when you're a role player on a team that has high aspirations, there is a level of pressure to perform. And when you are only have limited time and touches to hit those shots, to make those plays. You know, it's hard not to get up in your head. I can only imagine what it is like. Sometimes it is tougher to be the Landry Shamet than it is to be the Kevin Durant. Now, I said sometimes, it's not always is, but because you have to, you perform, and the spotlight is on you even more so, because it's just like, well, Landry Shamet isn't doing anything, let's bring in Chris Scherzer or whatever. Yep. You know, there's an incredibly flippant nature, and I'm included in that. You know, we're fickleist fans. You know, fan means fanatic. You know, you have irrational opinions on players and on the team as well. But, you know, I think he's going to find it, because to have the right mentality, to have the good headspace, I think is half the battle. And I think he's gonna do good things. He's gonna provide key moments for this team. And there were one or two moments tonight that I thought he was quite important as well.
Yeah, that three in the second half felt big. Yeah. It helped kind of keep the Nets keep the lead, or it was to tie it or something along those lines. And like you said, Jack, I think you like the mindset and the mentality. And like you said, at times it can be hard to be the role player, because you're getting such limited minutes and you're asked to hit shots without really getting many touches. So it's kind of finding that rhythm can be tough, especially with a new team, new coaching staff, and like we've mentioned a million times, lack of practice.
Big time. Nick, I got an awesome quote here from the king himself, Bruce Brown, and this is by Matt Brooks. Bruce Brown says he focused on Jamal Murray's tendency to drive right, honing in specifically on his step-back jumper. He only got me once, said Bruce. I love those little insights, like when Kevin Durant was talking about John Collins as one of the best screen slippers in the NBA.
Yep.
The defensive intelligence and the opposition awareness. You know, Bruce Brown, he's going to do... I want Steve Nash to throw him the responsibility to go, all right, you're going to go on RJ Barrett tomorrow night. You know, the next night, you're going to go on Stephen Curry. You got Damian Lillard. You got CJ McCollum. You got all these dudes. And I think he's going to relish that. He's just a dude. He's just a hooper. And he wants to perform. And he has a high level of expectation of himself that if he doesn't do the right things defensively, then he's going to show probably more criticism to himself than any other person is.
Yeah, I think the most important thing is that he takes playing defense personally. He only got me once. You know what I mean? Like, he wanted to end this game with him not getting him at all. Or like we talked about a few games ago, he wanted that one steal and he didn't get it. Obviously, I don't think he got the steal tonight, but he got three blocks, so that makes up for it. But, you know, you just like that type of energy. And that's a perfect fit for this team and what they need, given some of the other offensive weapons.
Definitely. You know, we talked about balance and Bruce Brown. There's a B in balance and there's a B in Bruce Brown as well. And I think that that's what's going to help the team. And he's important. You know, it's reminiscent of the David Nwaba experience that we saw in seasons past about, all right, we see what this guy can give. Let's get him some minutes. See what he can do out there. And, you know, he provided an immediate spark and impact to the Brooklyn Nets of yesteryear. And Bruce Brown is doing the same. And even more so, because David Nwaba's probably got a better three-point shot, and he was a flamethrower at points last yep. season. But Bruce Brown's level of defensive activity and acumen might be even greater. And they're completely different players. We love them both. This is a Nwaba and Brown Stan podcast. So it's good to see David Nwaba doing his thing in Houston. And it's great to see finally Bruce Brown getting the opportunity to do his thing for the Brooklyn Nets.
I mean, and when you have a team that can put up, you know, 122 points and shoot 60% from the field and 50% from three, you just need a little defense sometimes. And that's what Bruce Brown, Jared Allen, Jeff Green can give you. And just kind of let that dude Kevin Durant go to work. You know, that's how easy it really is. And I think that's why it just made so much sense for Bruce Brown to get minutes, because he just feels such a need in so many categories for the Nets. But Jack, anything else you want to talk about this game?
I think that the rebounding was good, Nick. You know, yeah. I thought that despite the fact that, you know, the Denver Nuggets started bowl bowl, I'm like, oh my God, this is going to be an interesting sort of matchup. But the Nets were able to out-rebound them defensively by 10 and only gave up one extra offensive board. So that's been a key emphasis for Steve Nash and the team. So that's a good thing. But yeah, the turnovers are still going to have to be honed in. 19 yep. turnovers, though they did get 19 points themselves off Denver Nuggets. 13 turnovers. So if that's going to be the case, if they can maintain, you know, a sort of evenness in terms of the points accrued / given up off turnovers, then that's where it's okay. But you can't give away that many turnovers, because it almost led to the loss. And, you know, there are things as well. The defense is going to take care of itself. Hopefully it's probably a greater emphasis going forward. But those are the things that you sort of look at for the Brooklyn Nets in terms of their success.
Yeah, I think the turnovers too is like they were all kind of like clumped together in that first quarter. What, they have 7 in the first quarter? So that kind of puts you in a hole. They kind of get some rhythm. They go on a run, and that's what really hurts you. I mean, I'm looking at points in the paint, 58-36 in favor of Brooklyn. And that's an area where we get frustrated at times, because they're not driving enough against some of the bad shot blockers that they faced. And tonight, obviously, Nikola Jokic, not an elite, you know, shot blocker by any means, but the Nets did a good job attacking in there and making sure they got some good shots in the paint.
Yeah, we gave up way too many. Like, if you're giving up more than 60, I think we've given up more than 60 on a couple of occasions this season, or at least high 50s and a 60 as well. That's where it's just not acceptable. And when you have Jeff Green, Jared Allen, Kevin Durant out there, you know, it certainly makes it a little bit easier to protect the paint and, you know, give up the three-pointers. It's just interesting, you know, because sometimes the Nets are too bad at closing out and giving up the three-pointer, and then sometimes they are over-helping, which leaves the lanes and leaves space to attack the paint. So yep. It's about that balance, and I'm talking about Bruce Brown. I'm not talking about Bruce Brown again. I'm just talking about the team overall. We need to get that balance. And
understanding the rotations is really important, where you need to be and where your teammate's going to be to help you. So like that play in which we talked about with Joe Harris, knowing the spot that he had to get to, and Bruce Brown and Jeff Green covering his ass on the other guys on the top of the key, that's where you can play really good defense, and that's where championship teams do, because they know where their teammates are going to be and they can help them and they can play off of each other. That's what's about Golden State. They were always there where they needed to be.
Yeah, and I mean, having Draymond Green, one of the best defenders in the history of the game, certainly does help. The Nets don't have that, but I think that they can make up for that with defensive activity, energy, and communication as a collective. And I think, you know, 46 points to the Denver Nuggets in the last half. Some of that is because just the Nets are hitting so many damn shots. When you don't miss, you don't have to defend in transition. So yep. It makes things a lot easier. So sometimes the best defense is a good offense, as they say, Nick.
Yeah, 100%, Jack. And obviously, this was a really good game, and this was a really interesting day for Nets fans, because we had some more news on the Kyrie Irving front, and there were some videos that surfaced of him last night being at his sister's birthday party, not wearing a mask in a large gathering while he's out with personal reasons. What are your thoughts on that, Jack, and just all the news that we've kind of had in the Kyrie front in the last 24 hours?
Man, I put out the tweet where it was just like, okay, we initially thought that Kyrie Irving was just taking a leave of absence for personal reasons. And pretty much all the Brooklyn Nets fan, or like the majority of the sound Brooklyn Nets fandom was supporting him, because it's just like, all right, sometimes people need to reset. And I put out a tweet, and we saw the Kevin Durant tweet, and that's still getting likes. I'm getting criticized for it, but I'm like, I did it like 2 days ago. Yeah. Don't need to like it and criticize me for it. So sometimes you have to justify some things on Twitter. But I was initially like, okay, there's a skepticism. I'm like, all right, is this real? Is this from last year? Where is he actually? Is he partying with Drake? Is he in Toronto? Where the heck is he? And now, to me, Nick, I've shown a level of distaste, anger towards James Harden, and I'm certainly getting there with Kyrie Irving's actions right now. Now, obviously, this is all hearsay and such, but what we have seen from the reporting from Anthony Puccio and the likes of others, you know, Worldwide Wob doing a deep dive like he's an FBI agent, which I thought was a bit corny, but I just sort of, I'm like, I kind of knew all this stuff. You can tell that there's a 30 on the cake there, my dude. Like, and we know that he's, and he got one thing wrong as well. He said that, oh no, it was actually Kyrie Irving's dad's birthday the same day. And it's just like, no, it was the day before. So he's a bit of a clown, but you know, whatever. But in saying that, Nick, the actions, and if Kyrie Irving is truly taking this time to reset mentally, and the impact is that great on him, why are you out at a party maskless during a pandemic? Whether you've had the disease or not, it shows a level of lack of empathy that is just shocking. And you know, I had people coming up in my comments saying like they had loved ones pass away because of the disease, and it just, it breaks your freaking heart, and it just shows a level of a lack of awareness and selfishness from Kyrie that we don't expect based off the actions that he's done, you know, off the court. But here, right now, you can only judge based off this incident itself, and it was truly selfish and truly distasteful, truly reckless, and truly dangerous. I don't like it, Nick, and it doesn't leave a good taste in my mouth.
Yeah, and that's just completely ignoring all the personal reason stuff. We don't know what that is. I'm sure we'll get more details on that. But just the fact of him being at this party, like you said, Jack, not wearing a mask when COVID-19 is happening, and given all the incidents that's happened in the NBA with COVID-19 and Kevin Durant just having to miss time because of protocol, Tyler Johnson still being out, the Nets being shorthanded and not having Spencer Dinwiddie, and putting yourself in a situation like this is kind of selfish, and it hurts the team. Because literally, who knows when he's going to be able to come back on the floor, because I don't know what the NBA is going to do with the COVID-19 protocols and setting those new rules today. They might want to make an example out of him. I would not be surprised if there was a suspension.
Look, he deserves it. Whatever comes his way, if he's found to be breaching the protocols of such, then he deserves to have the full brunt of Adam Silver and the NBA brass come down on him. We did see the statement from Sean Marks, you know, try, and we were waiting for it. And it came as this. I'm sure plenty of people that are listening have heard it, but I'll recite it anyway. We are aware of a video on social media featuring Kyrie Irving at a family gathering. So I think that that seems to probably set out the fact that he was partying with Drake aside. We are reviewing the circumstances with both Kyrie and the NBA in order to determine compliance with health and safety protocols. Kyrie remains away from the team due to personal reasons. A date of his return has yet to be finalized. It's not going to be up to the Brooklyn Nets and Kyrie Irving anymore. It's going to be up to the NBA. In the meantime, we'll continue to stay focused on our organizational goals. And my favorite line, Nick, passive-aggressive dad Sean Marks, passive-aggressive GM, Kyrie will have the opportunity to address his absence when he is ready to do so. Well, why hasn't he yet, Nick? Like, there's a level where he was at a gathering tonight for, I'll find it in a sec after, you know, I've chatted about this.
New York District Attorney, I believe.
Yeah, a New York District Attorney on a Zoom call. And it's just like, okay, there's all this stuff going on. And yes, the media is going to be too much of a circus. But it just seems to me that Kyrie Irving is wanting to live in his own bubble and just do everything that he wants to do without thinking about the actions of others and how his actions impact others. Because, look, we all want to be out partying with our family and friends. I've missed birthdays in the, like, I personally, not that it's a woe is me story. You know, I was undergoing, like, you know, 6 month lockdowns here in Melbourne, and thankfully it led to some positive results. But during that time, I missed birthdays. I missed 30th after 30th after 30th, and that's tough to deal with.
I had a post on my wedding twice.
Exactly, man. Like, you know, you felt the full brunt of it more than any other. You postponed your honeymoon like a goddamn a million times as well. So I think that Kyrie Irving's actions here, there's no excuse for them. And like, despite the fact that you might be out for personal reasons and you deserve to reset under the circumstances that we are living in right now, a pandemic. Take your time with your family, but do it in your goddamn house. If you're going out, wear a freaking mask, you goofball.
And make sure you're not on camera. Like, you got to know better than that, too. You know what I mean? Like, even if you are doing something like this, like, you know that if they see you out there, you're going to get blown up. And that's exactly what happened. And like you said, Jack, he's living in some type of bubble, because even like people have talked to me and they're not even huge Kyrie guys or anything. And they're just like, if he put out a statement and just said, hey, I'm going to be out for a week or two because of personal reasons, I need some time to handle some things, everything would probably be a lot better. But he didn't do that. And that's just a simple thing that he could have done to alleviate pressure off the Nets, off his teammates. And he just didn't do it. And like you said, he's just being selfish with the party and not thinking about the consequences that it can have on him, his teammates, and even the Nets' record.
Yeah, no, and look,
basketball isn't everything, but you do owe your teammates something.
It seems to be a really low priority for Kyrie Irving. It seems to me that he thinks, and look, that's fine, but you are getting paid $40 million. And I'm not doing a shut up and dribble thing, but you need to have a level of communication with the key stakeholders. And we heard Steve Nash say today that they're keeping it private, that they've been in contact. But I think he needs to show a level of professionalism. And to me, it's not necessarily about, like, if I didn't see this video, I would still be standing Kyrie right now, because he would be out for those personal reasons. And I wouldn't know what's going on behind the scenes, whether he was dealing with them personally or with his family or whatever. But the actions that he did show and the selfishness that he did show, I'm going to come down hard on him like I've done in the past for other players.
Yep.
And I think the team is getting frustrated with him as well, if Anthony Puccio is anything to go by. And I think if you go and buy net sources, Anthony Puccio is probably the number one you're going to go for. And he wrote this in a tweet and in his piece for the association. The team's patience with the star point guard is growing thin, and they have made that clear with him. That's pretty impactful and pretty resounding, Nick.
Yeah, I mean, the Nets are being a little stern. We obviously knew there were some incidents last year. They weren't necessarily huge. I think some of it happened on the China trip and people calling him moody, and I think the Nets were okay with that and all those small things. But if you continue to do this and you're not showing up and playing basketball, if you're playing basketball on the court and playing at an elite level and you're winning games, some of this stuff gets swept under the rug. You know what I mean? But the fact he's not doing his main job for the Nets have him for one reason. That's to go out there and win basketball games. Obviously, you love all the off-the-court stuff and the stuff he does for the community. But at the end of the day, they're paying him $40 million to be an elite point guard in the NBA.
Does it shock you at all, Nick? Because we're seeing Kyrie Irving in a situation that he's chosen to be in his hometown, and he was partying in New Jersey, funnily enough, you know, partying, quote-unquote, for his sister's 30th birthday. But it seems to me that this is almost, I think it's uncharacteristic. Kyrie Irving's off-the-court antics have been more about locker room sort of stuff and that sort of thing. I've never seen this level of selfishness from him. He seemed to be... This is like an out-of-character moment from him, because what we have seen is that Kyrie has a passion and desire to be a Brooklyn there and to bring a championship there. But his actions right now and lately haven't reflected that. And I'm not taking away from the fact that he still might be struggling mentally with what is going on in the world around us. But the actions that we're judging and talking about now, that doesn't necessarily cancel them out.
Yeah, no, I agree, Jack. I think that's what I find so strange, is that, like, he was so hyped to be a Net. He's such a big New Jersey Nets fan, and obviously he was hyped about the New Jerseys. And the night that they showed them and they displayed them on the court, you know what I mean, and they showcased them, he wasn't playing. And I just felt like that was so strange. And like you said, I mean, I think somewhat out of character, but – I don't think this is something that is like a giant surprise. Like, I think there's plenty of people that have probably been like, I'm not surprised Kyrie Irving's, you know, causing some drama with the Nets. I think this is kind of just like another level of it. And I think like it's a little extra selfish in comparison to what we've seen, but he's also done some things in the past that were somewhat questionable, and we always tend to give him the benefit of the doubt. But if you continue to do things like this, at some point, you don't deserve the benefit of the doubt. When you say negative comments and the media analyzes them in the wrong way, that's your own fault, because your actions are speaking louder than your words. And this is a bad action. This isn't just a bad quote that the media is running with.
Yeah, I think this is the worst, Nick. You know, I was pretty hard on, you know, JBT a couple of years ago when I first started with OGD Basketball about, you know, his quotes about the flat earth and as a teacher, how that offended me and stuff. But that pales in significance to the reckless behavior that he's shown.
During a pandemic, like you said,
Jeff. During a goddamn pandemic where... people, and I think Richard Jefferson was great on the jump today in terms of the comments that he made. You know, you just have to look around the league and hear the likes of Karl Anthony Towns and how this virus has affected him and his family, and just go, okay, how can you show a lack of empathy when I personally think that Kyrie by nature is an empathetic person, but I'm really shocked by it, Nick, but I'm also really, really pissed off.
Yeah, it definitely is very frustrating, especially just from the fan perspective, as you wait so long to have this team and then the player just, you don't really know what to expect. I mean, I'm assuming he's going to obviously play for the Nets again this season. I just don't really know when that's going to be. They've already said he's not going to play this week. And then like we've mentioned, the NBA could possibly suspend him. He's going to be in protocol, which feels like a month. So I really don't know. It just is, it's a really nasty situation. The Nets have already had their issues this year, and this kind of just added to it. Luckily, they came up with a W tonight, and Kevin Durant was godly. He looked like MVP form, so it's easy to kind of forget about this. But if there is a loss to the Knicks tomorrow night, and it'll kind of linger a little bit more.
Are you convinced by the response? Like you said, we'll see him in this season. Alex Schiffer put out the full quote, and we saw the sure, and everyone's just like, oh, you only said sure. But Alex Schiffer provided the full context, and he asked, are you sure Kyrie will be back this year, or are you at least confident he will be? And he's like, and Steve Nash's response was, sure. Like I said, right now I got to focus on coaching this team and getting the best out of them, so I can't make any predictions or prognostications about things outside of this building. We've got our hands full with the Nuggets, and this is 5 games in 7 nights, and we're in places where we're just really trying to put our foundations in still. My hands are full there, and that's where I have to focus. I feel like Sean Marks is probably going to have to step up a bit here as well and earn his paycheck. But it didn't leave me with the greatest level of confidence. There's people saying out there, look, the comparisons to Hitler are disgusting. You know, I think that was really, really distasteful. You know, I get it. I'm pretty goddamn pissed off with Kyrie Irving as a fan in general and as a person with the actions that he's done. But yeah, that was goddamn stupid. And people saying that he's going to retire. Look, I could be proven wrong, but I just can't see that happening. But who knows, man? Predicting Kyrie Irving's behavior is like predicting whether the Brooklyn Nets are going to play defense.
And that's tough to do. I think Steve Nash is starting to get pissed. I think he's starting to get annoyed about it. He's come in and been as good as possible, has been as friendly and nice to Kyrie and allowed him to do his own thing. I'm sure he hasn't really interfered much with his play either. So it's just like, I think Nash is starting to get annoyed because he knows that it's such an uphill battle for what the Nets want to do, and they want to win a championship. And Kyrie's making that battle harder for the team.
I don't want to ask you this question, but I also do, Nick, because this is going to be good for a soundbite that we'll probably put out on Twitter or something. Can the Nets win a championship without Kyrie Irving fully bought in?
You know, I thought about this question a lot today.
Something that Stephen A. Smith would bring to, like, First Take or whatever.
You know, I think it's gonna. It would be extremely difficult to win a championship without Kyrie Irving. Without him playing at an elite level, it'd be very, very difficult, especially given Spencer Dinwiddie is out. If Spencer Dinwiddie was healthy, I could make an argument still for the Nets possibly being the best team in the Eastern Conference with Spencer Dinwiddie being there. But without him, it's really tough to do because the Nets don't even have a point guard without Kyrie Irving. They have Chris Chioza, who's on a two-way contract, but they don't have another NBA-level starting point guard. You know what I mean? Caris LeVert is in that six-man role, not necessarily a true point guard. KD can do it, but that's what really hurts. I mean, the Nets could still win a championship if Sean Marks were to make some type of big move. Is that maybe trading for a Kyle Lowry or something? I don't know. But I think there's other avenues on the table for them to win a championship if you're not sure what happens with Kyrie Irving or if you're not confident he's fully bought in.
Yeah, look, it's...
What do you think?
This is, I don't think so. I think you summed it up pretty perfectly there. I think that Kevin Durant isn't going to be like LeBron James of Cleveland years and sort of lead this team to something, especially when you have, you know, your second or third best player in Spencer Dinwiddie out. You know, Spencer Dinwiddie comes back in May or something, then maybe, you know, I'll come around to it. Yeah, I think it's incredibly unlikely, especially with the, you know, Milwaukee Bucks, the Boston Celtics, the Philadelphia 76ers. The East is becoming even, yeah, the Pacers, you know, the full access Pacers. There's a lot of competition in the East right now. And, you know, there's no way they can win a championship against the likes of the Los Angeles Lakers with Anthony Davis and LeBron James, even the Clippers. You know, I think that they did well against the Western Conference contender who hasn't been performing to their best in the Denver Nuggets tonight. But that's one game. I don't necessarily think that Kevin Durant can do it for 16 games across a playoff series, even though he is that good in general. So, look, it's going to be something that is ongoing, Nick, and I've got a feeling that we'll probably be addressing this after the game tomorrow. I have a feeling that there'll probably be some more news via the NBA and Woj by the next time we record.
Yeah, 100%, Jack. Obviously, you got the back-to-back. They're playing the New York Knicks tomorrow. That should be a fun game. KD is playing in that game. He is playing in that back-to-back, which is pretty
cool. Oh, has that been confirmed?
Yeah, that's been reported. I believe it was Mark Stein. I'll double-check real quick, though. Mark Stein reported that Nets Kevin Durant says he plans to play tomorrow against the Knicks in the second half of the back-to-back. So
yeah, that's good for his progression, don't you think, Nick?
100%. It gives you a lot of confidence. I mean, I wouldn't have been surprised if the Nets didn't play him on one back-to-back the entire season because, yeah. I mean, I'm super conservative with Kevin Durant, but I wouldn't be surprised. But given the circumstances, they do need him. They do need to win games, and I think he might have something a little special for the Knicks tomorrow.
No, definitely. We know what Kevin Durant thinks about the Knicks. I might have to bring out a quote. You're actually giving me a good idea. I might bring out a quote about, you know, him not thinking the Knicks are cool. That might be a good one to post in the AM. But to keep the noise away from Kyrie Irving and all that jargon and noise, hopefully we find out something around that so there isn't all the external BS that is covering because...
I'd like to hear from Kyrie.
I want to hear from him as well, Nick, but I don't necessarily expect it. I'll probably... I'm expecting, whether if anything, it's probably going to be like a five-word Instagram post story or whatever. I do follow him on Instagram, so I'll be keeping an eye on his page.
Or
that's
an
for sure.
IG Live. I wouldn't
or an IG Live, but I can't necessarily mean envisioning it being as chill as hanging with Kai. Man, it feels like eons ago that we were arguing about why is Kyrie Irving wanting 8 post-ups a game.
Yeah, I definitely things have changed. But again, very happy about the Nets win tonight. Seeing Kevin Durant play the way he did. Caris LeVert looking great. Joe Harris, Bruce Brown, a lot of fun and a great victory. 18-point comeback. Always a pleasure talking Nets with you, Jack. And big thanks to everybody listening.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G. Because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters. The more your network matters. The more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.